it's so easy to have an image in your mind when you're looking at AI that you're talking to a program and you're sending information, you're writing things to this program, and the program itself is responding. So I think it's very easy to see that it's just you and the program.
Yes.
When you're running, you know, Microsoft Copilot, then all the information is going to Microsoft.
That's right.
When you're running ChatGPT or any others, the data that you're typing in, all the data you're typing in, is going to whoever is running that AI. 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Love Machine.
Welcome to another episode of Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I'm Seth Payne. I'm here with my ever co-nerd, Cesar.
Hello.
And we are jumping into our first kind of subsection of episodes about artificial intelligence. We've had a couple episodes talking about what it is, and today we're going to begin to talk about the ethics of artificial intelligence. But before we jump into it, I want to remind you, if you go to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list to find out when we're putting out new episodes. If you go to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get some cool t-shirts and mugs, some nerdy things that we've been working on, and just some fun ways to show the world that you are a Catholic and that you are a nerd. And if you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/support, you can support us financially, and we appreciate any support that anyone gives us. So jumping into this question of ethics, and there's so many different areas of questions of ethics and artificial intelligence, and I feel like this topic just keeps getting more and more pertinent and more important as artificial intelligence gets so much bigger. You know, all the talks around the data centers, about electricity with the data centers. So one of the areas that we're going to be looking at is the question of copyright in artificial intelligence. We'll be looking into the question of universal basic income has been a phrase that's been talked about, especially in one of the recent presidential races, of this idea of people getting a basic income level. You know, that has actually been talked about around artificial intelligence, thinking about if artificial intelligence is going to take many or all of people's jobs, then how are people going to survive? And, you know, that's kind of getting into a bigger conversation about livelihood of different people in the world of artificial intelligence. We're going to get into the meaning of work. You know, what does it mean for people to work in an age if machines are doing most of the work? I'm excited for this one. We're going to be looking into some of the encyclicals of the church going all the way back to Pope Leo XIII, back in the late 19th century at the time of the first Industrial Revolution, all the way up to Pope Leo XIV and his thoughts on artificial intelligence. And then there are a few other areas we're going to go into, but I'm really excited about this whole section on ethics. But today we're going to start out with the question of privacy and artificial intelligence. So Cesar, where are we going to start off?
Sure. So as we saw in previous episodes about AI, you know, artificial intelligence, basically we always have to remember that AI is a mathematical model, no? That has been pre-trained to perform a specific task. Whatever that task is, LLM, whatever that task is, help you coding, recognizing pictures and videos, recognizing spatial patterns, or recognizing faces, you know? So whatever this is always remember that it's a mathematical model, no? But what is the goal? And let's look from the enterprise perspective, no? So a couple of months ago, last year actually, Microsoft AI CEO said that the goal of Microsoft Copilot was to see what you see, hear what you hear, and know what you know. No? So that raises a lot of questions because you really have to ask yourself, do you really want your computer to see what you see, to hear what you hear, and to know what you know?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
And it's a it's really weird, no? And you think about that, it's like, in my view, I feel like somebody has turned into my cell phone and is listening to me every time. but I also can see what I'm surfing on, you know, whatever. So it's really creepy, you know? And then I remember also Satya Nadella, Microsoft CEO, in an interview regarding Microsoft Recall, say that this recall feature will help you recreate moments in the past. You know? And then the interviewer asked him, some might think Microsoft is able to screenshot every 5 seconds of all the activity that I'm doing in my computer. Don't you think that's really creepy? No.
Yeah.
It was a fine question.
After this ethics series, we're going to be talking a bit about, you know, the metaphysics around AI. What is this intelligence actually? But I think where that touches into this, and I think one of the things that we're going to be coming back to a lot in this episode around privacy is who is getting this information? You know, thinking about Microsoft, or, you know, it's so easy to have an image in your mind when you're looking at AI that you're talking to a program and you're sending information, you're writing things to this program, and the program itself is responding. So I think it's very easy to see that it's just you and the program.
Yes.
When you're running, you know, Microsoft Copilot, then all the information is going to Microsoft.
That's right.
When you're running ChatGPT or any others, the data that you're typing in, all the data you're typing in is going to whoever is running that AI.
You're right. Yes. Because when you are using Google, Gemini, all is going to the Google servers, no? And Microsoft Copilot go to the Copilot service. Just talking about what you said, Seth, we have to make distinction because we extensively talked in last episode about what is the mathematical model. But when we talk about this ChatGPT, Google Gemini, Microsoft Copilot, those are basically software composed in two parts, right? Mm-hmm. First part is the model, and we talked extensively in previous episodes about what is the model, no? But the second part is the agent. So that's the piece of software that interacts with the model and with the person also, no? So what is the agent doing is key to know who is actually accessing my private information.
Yeah, so thinking about agents, as you said, when you go to ChatGPT, you're typing into the agent, and the agent is interacting with the trained model on their servers. Yes. And so, as we said before, anything you type in is going to someone else's server.
Yep.
But one of the things, and actually, you know, Cesar taught me this last year. He helped me get it on my laptop. You can run different AI models on your own computer. And I have a MacBook Air, so it's not a terribly powerful laptop. I mean, it's a decent one, but it's not really powerful. But I can run one of these smaller AI models right on the laptop. And so there's a great program called Olama. It's O-L-L-A-M-A. And so you can download this program on your computer. And then through that, you can download a number of different models. There are some larger ones that can't be run on just a regular laptop, but there are a few different smaller AI models that you can run right on your laptop. And the great thing with this is if I'm running this on my laptop, the model is on my laptop and the agent is on my laptop. And so all the information that I'm putting in stays on my laptop. It's not being sent to any other company. And so I don't need to worry that Microsoft or Google or someone is going to know all that information about me if I can keep it right on my laptop. And so Cesar and I have talked before also about this idea of free software. And Richard Stallman, who was one of the founding members of the free software movement. You think about, you know, Linux, Apache. There are so many programs that are used in the world today that came out of this movement of free software. And there were four ways that he talked about software being free. So the first, and being a good computer scientist, Richard Stallman started with zero. So freedom number like zero.
a computer nerd.
Yeah, like a good computer nerd. He started with zero. So freedom number zero, he said, you have the freedom to run the program as you wish. So however you need to use a program, you're free to use it that way. You're not constrained by the software to say you're only allowed to use it this way or this way. Freedom number one is the freedom to study the source code of the program and change it as you wish. And so if you download a free program, or as some people will call it, an open source program, you have the freedom to look into the source code. And if you say, well, this program does so many things I want to do, but I needed to do something extra, you just open the source code. And if you can code, you just add the functions that you need to add to it. Freedom number two is the freedom to help your neighbor by copying and distributing your copy. So let's say I download a copy of the code of Apache, of the Apache web server, but I want it to do something extra. So I add some code to it to do something I need it to do. I should have the freedom to then take that code, the Apache code, with my changes and share it with other people. And so you think about Linux is another one of the major projects in the free software, open software movement. There are a number of different Linux distributions out there because different groups have downloaded Linux, the core, and said, you know, I would really love it to have this kind of graphic interface. So they created their own interface for it. Or I need these programs to run on top of it. So they will, you know, create libraries or different programs to run on it. And then they would take the changes that they've made and they would put it out as a distribution. So they had the freedom not just to download it or to change it, but also to share the changes that they've made and distribute it to others. And then the freedom number three, to make and distribute modified copies to enhance your community. So the whole idea of freedom in this free software, open software movement is really a way to better, in a kind of an altruistic way, to better society by allowing people access to this free software that will help make their lives better. And a lot of people that have been involved, some of the big hitters in the open source free software movement, they've really done a lot of their work for the reputation that it has given them above any monetary gains they might have gained if they had kept the source code and sold the software.
Yeah. And we have to always remember that when we talk about the freedom of software, even if you code and you can sell your program, you sell, but you open source it. No, we have always to remember is it's not like free beer, it's more like free speech. Now, that kind of freedom.
Yeah. That was a quote that I think it was Linus Torvald said all the time. Free as in speech, not free as in beer.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And if you want a really good book on the open source free software movement, there's a book called The Cathedral in the Bazaar. So it's written by Eric S. Raymond, another founder of the open source free software movement. But that's great coming from even the title, The Cathedral and the Bazaar, the cathedral being the kind of closed source image of just a few people in charge and no one else can know what's going on behind the curtains. And the bazaar, where you have a whole bunch of people, this image of sharing of ideas and sharing of just ways to make things better.
That's a good point. So I like what said Seth about free software and what does free software implies. Because when we talk, especially when we talk about AI, about the agent part of the AI, you want to know what exactly that piece of software is doing, no? And if you go to Microsoft Copilot, Google Gemini, or Apple Intelligence actually use ChatGPT's one, but those are closed source, no? So you really don't know what they are doing. Although you interact and it's like the image of the cathedral, you don't know what's going on behind the curtain, no? Mm-hmm. And that is the main thing, no? So when we talk about privacy, I want to highlight privacy in cyberspace. No, how do you achieve privacy in cyberspace? No, so for example, you have your name, but there's no information about your name. No, they just know there's a name there, but they don't know what is your IP. They don't know your location. They don't know what kind of information are you looking for in the website. So a name without information means nothing. Nobody can blackmail you because, first of all, they don't know who blackmail on which what. blackmail, you know? And of course, you have the other side. You have a lot of information disseminated, but you don't know to who belong that information. That's also useless because in cyberspace, anonymity is achieved when either they know your name, but they don't know your information, or they know some information, but they cannot attach that information to you. Then you have anonymity on the cyberspace. Or if they don't know nothing about you, but well, it's obviously that's anonymity everywhere else, not only in cyberspace. So if somebody wants to identify, you have to have the name or identifier plus the information, both combined, and then somebody got you.
And it's important to know that if you're in your browser and you go into an incognito window, but you still log into a service like ChatGPT, the incognito window is not going to help you from keeping your information from ChatGPT because you logged in.
Yeah, that's exactly right, no? Or for example, you are using Google Gemini, you know, and you are reading your email, and then you open a window, an incognito window, but you're still logging in with your Google account. Mm-hmm. Come on. I mean, so there is a lot of things, a lot of practices, no? So let's analyze, for example, Copilot is the same, no? This is starting in Microsoft with Windows 10, but right now with Windows 11, Microsoft is always trying to log in to your computer with a Microsoft account. That's an identifier, no? Because whatever you do in that laptop, whatever information that laptop goes, it can easily be tracked, no? Even without AI, there was an era when Microsoft has a lot of disputes about telemetry, the quantity of telemetry that they got, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's impressive because sometimes, you know, in the past when I used to use only Windows in my computer, sometimes you are doing nothing and the computer starts, you start to hear the fan. What's going on? I'm not doing nothing. I'm not doing nothing in my computer right now. And then you open the taskbar and you see telemetry, like 45% of your CPU, a lot of information being exchanged. Oh, wow. That's a massive package. So even before AI, Microsoft didn't have, you know, the best reputation about privacy.
Our data is so valuable. I mean, our data is more valuable, I think, in many ways than our money.
Yes.
To these companies, because they can then turn around and sell our data for so much more than they would get from us for buying software.
Exactly. You know,
and thinking about who owns all these services, they're getting our data. I just feel like we're becoming more and more cogs in the machine in so many ways. You know, you think about software. You know, it used to be you needed software, you would just go buy a CD and install the software, and then you have the software. And if you don't need to upgrade it, then you don't upgrade it. And then, you know, if you upgrade it, then you have to buy the next version. But if you're fine with the version you have, you keep that as long as you need it. But now it's almost impossible to get software without a subscription. So they have us paying them every month. And then they're getting our data any way that they can. And what are they doing with that? They're making money. So really, there's so many things that we're doing that we don't even know is helping these companies get richer and richer.
Yeah, and not only that, but there are so many issues that you see in the news, like data breach. You know, hackers has compromised some Azure center or, you know, whatever. The hacker has, hacked this data center and has a lot of private information. And when we are talking about, this is really sensitive, no? Addresses, credit cards, numbers, it's really sensitive. No?
Yeah, so, well, and what happens with all this data on the AI servers, if they get hacked, they know everything that you do.
That's
your whole life.
They know your whole life because, you know, your computer stopped being your computer and it's kind of a terminal to the servers of the big corporations. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes, especially with AI, even before AI, there was a good thing that is called end-to-end encryption, no? Because for the guys that are a little more nerds, you know, there's RSA protocol that goes with public and private keys, and you can have a totally end-to-end conversation between two people at the end of their computers, and nobody else will have the ability to decrypt that, no? Mm-hmm. But AI right now poses a big problem to end-to-end encryption, because let's take the example from Recall. Recall can do a screenshot, and when they screenshot, they are taking the screenshot of the plain text that you are writing, not the encrypted text after the fact, no? So that's a problem. That's breaking the end-to-end encryption with AI could be easily done, no? And this started actually in 2015 when there was a criminal case that some criminal has in their iPhone has some pictures of kids. It was actually, it was a pedophile case. But the thing is that the FBI, in order to grab him, FBI as Apple, you know, I want the encryption key so we can see what's in their iPhone. And Apple refused that in the first place. And that's why Apple has the big privacy bastion. But at the end, the FBI told them, well, you know, I understand you want the privacy. I need a way to, even though you have the end-to-end encryption, to know if somebody is taking inappropriate photo of kids. No? And that project was the CSAM detection system. No? CSAM, the C-S-A-M stands for Child Sexual Abuse Material. That's the CSAM. And Apple got a CSAM detection system. And how did they do it? They install the face recognition and things like that. They install a software in their system that can recognize if a photo is related to CSAM, right? And that system can recognize instantaneously, no? And it kind of triggers an alert to headquarters and they will know, no? So in that way, no human can see what's in your phone. But, you know, AI is not a human, so with that, Apple can still claim that they are being private to you, but at the same time, they can know what kind of picture you are taking. Because whether you can recognize, you know, see some photos or any other type of photos, because that technology is not limited, you can do recognition of any type of photo, not only see some photos. No? And that's the beginning of AI. That was before the big LLM revolution. Yeah. No? So imagine, what can it be done now, no?
Yeah. Yeah, and the issue around encryption and some all these programs that are eroding privacy can be couched so easily in language of, well, you don't want these pedophiles sharing all these pictures. Well, of course not. You don't want drug traffickers being able to get away with letting people know where they're going to be selling drugs without the authorities knowing. It's like, no, I don't. There are so many illegal things that happen that are easier, because we have to admit, are easier because of encryption. But at the same time, the question is, who do you trust? Anyone that has the ability to see past anyone's encryption, you have to be able to trust them. Yes. And so this whole idea, then, as you said, going even further with AI, if AI can, in many different ways, whether it's, you know, your connection to an agent, you know, a remote agent, and they're taking screenshots, or, you know, if there are any way that it can get around any encryption or any privacy, is worrying, because you don't know, even if there are some trustworthy people on the other end, there's no guarantee that everyone on the other end is trustworthy. You know, you don't know who's on the other side looking at your information. And, you know, it is so easy for people to say, well, you're just fear-mongering. I think one of the things that's so important about thinking about these questions from a Catholic perspective is looking at human nature. You know, I think it's so easy to look past human nature and say, well, you know, people are on the most part good. And as Catholics, we can say we were created good, absolutely. But we also have a sinful nature. And so we all, in our own ways, have different temptations that we deal with. And so we know that we're not perfect. We know that we have times of temptation where we say, you see a $20 bill on the side of the street. It's like, oh, you know, I could really use $20. Or yeah. Should I hand that into someone? If someone has access to your personal data and they know, it's like, well, you know, they're not going to know that I sold that data to someone else. I mean, that's why we have so many laws around this stuff, so that when it happens, because we know it does all the time, that justice can be done, you know, that the people can be held accountable.
Yes.
And so for our own safety and privacy, you know, we want to be able to keep as much of our information to ourselves.
Yeah. And the other thing is that when the United States, the founding fathers, when they think about building a new republic, creating the United States of America, they were thinking about the government to serve the people. And they were thinking the government should be transparent and the people must have the privacy. Yeah. And right now, you know, more than 200 years later, it's kind of the other way around, no? The government wants to do the things without anybody knowing, but they want to know what the people are doing, which is flipped. I mean, it was never the intention.
The question is, you know, what's more important to you, privacy or security? Yeah. You know, it's so many things have happened that have eroded our privacy in the name of security.
Yeah.
And I know that you can go really far on the other side of privacy versus security, where, you know, I don't trust anyone. Yeah. Therefore, I'm going to stockpile weapons and MREs and hide off in a cabin in the woods and shoot at anyone that gets anywhere near me. There's always trade-offs between privacy and security. I think it's just important to know what you're doing, especially online, especially with all these new AI agents. I think that one of the big takeaways of this episode is you need to be mindful of what sites you're doing them on and who could possibly get any data that you're sharing online.
That's
So, you know, be careful. And this also includes, you know, social media.
Yes.
Be careful about what you share online. You know, Cesar and I, neither of us have shared any pictures or information about our families on our podcast because that information doesn't need to be out there. And even on Facebook, sometimes I'll share some family stuff, but even though I have it set up to only allow friends to see it, I'm still very careful about what I share.
That's right.
So it's not like we're trying to be fear-mongering here. We just want people to be careful.
Yeah, and we want people to know, you know, the two sides of the reality of AI, no? The AI can help you a lot, but what also it's... Because with a lot of help, also there's a flip side, no? And we want people to know both sides, no? So you can make a, how do you say this? An informated, you take an informated decision.
Informative decision. Yes. Yeah, you want to have the information. And this goes back to looking at the virtues. You need to be prudent in everything you do. And the definition of prudence is to have a true understanding of the reality around you and how you respond to it. You don't want to just put your head in the sand and say, well, you know, I can do whatever I want with these, you know, AI agents, and I'm sure I'll be fine. there's so many issues now that the way that people are treating AIs, you know, these agents as people, and they're sharing all this information with them, even information that most people should only be sharing with their close family members and their therapist.
Yeah, but you know that you say that, we have to ask the questions. Is all AI bad, or is our privacy really doomed? I don't think so, really. And fortunately for us, we have a lot of free software and agentic AI, no? Seth mentioned Llama. Llama is really very good, no? I want to share, for example, what I do. So I use my computer and I have a partition for Windows because when I have to work, everybody use Word, Excel, Microsoft, you know, PowerPoint, and I have to use that part in order to interact with other and to see the files, no? But then I have another partition that I put, in my case, my flavor of Linux, which is Ubuntu, which is the easiest one, one of the easiest ones, really easy to install. So my personal stuff is in Linux, and I am sure that way that no telemetry about my personal stuff is feeding Microsoft servers, no? And when we talk about AI, a very good solution is Ollama, no? You just download Ollama from the Ollama site, ollama.com, and then download it if you like to use, for example, like my friend said, he likes to use Apple. It is for Apple, no? If you still want to use it on Windows, there's for Windows, and of course, there's a version for Linux too, no? And I start looking at what AI model you want to use, no? For example, if you want to start downloading Llama 3.2, just you open your command center and just type Ollama pool Llama 3.2, and that will download almost 3 gigabytes of the model, no? Once that's downloaded, you just type Ollama run Llama 3.2, and then voila. At that point, literally, you can disconnect from the internet.
Yeah.
You can disconnect from the internet, and you can have that conversation with the model, and you can be sure that there's no data transmitted, because you can turn off your Wi-Fi, and you will still see that the model is still there, because everything is running from your laptop.
I'm looking at right now, on the top bar on my Mac, I have the little Llama icon saying that it's running, and there's a little down arrow. Every few days, they update the model, so you can download the latest model, and then you'll have the latest data in it. But as you said, as soon as you download it, you can disconnect and use it as much as you want and not worry that any data is being sent to anyone. But it's been very useful. And as I've shared before, I use it for taking the transcripts of our videos and using it to help generate the description text and, you know, summaries, the tags and titles and poster text and everything. So it's been a really helpful tool to process all the data, the things that we do in our recordings.
Yeah, that's right. And it's really, really easy to use, no? Mm-hmm. Ollama, it's really easy to use. It's sure that it's all running from your computer, no? And has model that recognizes video, has model that recognizes photos. So it's really helpful. It's really helpful. No? And when you just want to stop using the model, just type -by and the model closes and you go back to your computer doing your normal things. No?
Yeah.
So one of the things that, you know, we want to close out this episode about privacy, whatever program you're using, whatever OS you are using, be mindful that the more information you put to your OS and that OS sends it back to headquarters, is the more privacy you are losing. No? Some of the recommendation, if you use Windows, for example, there's a way that you can still don't sign to a Microsoft account. No? Just when you want to do a specific thing, you just sign in the app, but you don't need to sign your whole session when you log into Windows to a Microsoft account. No? Similar to Apple, when in Linux, it does. You don't sign in. You just use username and password, and that's all local. No, and please remember the rule of privacy. No, in order to have privacy in cyberspace, you need to have your identifier plus the data attached to your identifier. No, whether you take out the data or take out your identifier, you can be anonymous. No? But when you are putting both together, somebody can easily identify you in the cyberspace. That might be a good person, or that might be a bad person. And that's when trouble start to happen.
Yeah.
And scams start to go to your email or things like that. And you don't want that. You really don't want that.
I'm so thankful that I grew up in an age when people didn't have access to any of my information. There's no internet. You know, people always say, oh, this is such a simpler time, but it really was. We are being very careful with our kids to keep them out of all these, you know, off of social media, all these things. And so, you know, really being trying to help them to learn to be careful with their information and who they talk to and who they share information with.
Yes. And please remember, you know, our intention in this episode is not to scare you, it's not to be fear-monger, but to inform you that technology exists and what is installed in your computer and what is the possibilities of that technology. You know? So just be mindful and assess said, in order to be prudent, you need to know.
And yeah.
So we let you know what is possible with this, no?
Well, and I think this is something else we'll be coming back to a lot, is that Cesar and I are at heart big nerds. And so AI is cool, you know, and there are some really neat things you can do with AI.
Yes.
But, you know, as we said a couple times, you need to be prudent and you just need to be careful, both with your information, but also how you treat it. And privacy is just the first of the things that we want to talk about as far as some of the ethical issues around it. And so come back for our next episode. We're going to be looking into, you know, the meaning of work and what is it going to mean that AI takes people's jobs? What does work mean? And what is work going to mean when artificial intelligence starts taking more and more of people's jobs, both for the quality of the work, as well as what people are going to do when their job is taken from them. So join us next episode when we jump into that. But for now, I want to remind you, if you go to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list and get notifications when we put out new episodes and other things that are happening in the Nerdy Catholic multiverse. If you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get some cool t-shirts and mugs and other cool nerdy things to wear and show off. If you head over to thatnerdycatholic.com/support, you can help support us financially, and we would really appreciate it. I also want to remind you, if you go to thatnerdycatholic.com/AI, that is the page that we've set up to follow this series. And on the bottom of that page, there is a form to fill out. If you have any thoughts, any questions, any topics you would like us to cover, just go to thatnerdycatholic.com/AI and share your thoughts with us there. So I want to thank you again for joining us. Cesar, it's great as always talking to you.
Oh, it's a pleasure, my brother. It's really a pleasure.
All right. God bless.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
System shut down.